Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Yep, we got another great show today dealing with metaphysics and spirituality. Today I thought that based on a number of things that I have been listening to this week, as well as some other thoughts, and I've done shows on this in the past, I'd like to do today's show on what is really the meaning of and the expression of something being sacred. And for a lot of people, this may have different meanings. You know, so I, of course, as usual, I'm going to give my definition, but of course you can give your own if you want. You can call in at 877-876-5227 if you're in the U.S., and 888-815-97, hold on, let me look at that number. Somebody moved it way far away from me, 9756 in Canada. There it is. I'll give it to you one more time, 888-815-9756. It helps when it isn't about 4 feet from me. Okay. So anyway, let me tell you something about what it means to be sacred, because sacredness is a very special condition. It has an awful lot to do with a big creator issue. Some people call it God. Some people call it whatever you want to call it. I'm not referring to a religion here. I'm referring to a principle, a concept, a metaphysical and spiritual factor that is the basis of what our universe comes from. And this we'll call it being, this thing, this it, this all-encompassing creator that is the creator of everything that we experience, is ultimately an architect of, we'll call it, a thought process and a mind. It's more than that, but it's at least that. And we, including all life in existence, but we as humans, particularly in human life, are an expression of how this creator can be everything in the beginning of the process and yet grow itself. It limits itself first by allowing the life that it creates to have free choice, including free thinking. And the ability to be self-creative and co-creative with its creator, especially if you're a human or beyond. And in that particular process, this allows the creator to grow itself by, we'll say, allowing freedom for the life, which is its own expression of its own way of growing, to be free and to do so, if it chooses to, in the direction of its own creator. Now, what is sacred? How is sacred part of this whole process that I just described? Now, I know I went through it pretty quick, but the reason I go so quick is because if you've listened to this show, you've heard me explain those concepts in much broader detail. And today's show is really about a specific element of it, so I'm not going to spend the whole show on just describing the creator and et cetera. I'm just giving you the thumbnail, and then you can fill it in by going to the archives of either this station or also at agelesswisdom.com. We've got some of the shows up there. And you can listen to prior shows to find out more. Now, sacred means, this is my definition, I know, sacred means that whatever we are discussing as becoming sacred is an expression of the thought and the sacrifice and the creation or creations of our own creator. Something is sacred when it is an expression of those things that I just described. Now, it's very important to understand this, because that means that, by my definition, you can't necessarily know what sacred is if you don't have some understanding of what I mean by the creator. And not just me personally, because I'm talking about a whole philosophy and cosmology that comes from, ageless philosophies of great wisdom. Some people call it even ageless wisdom. And from that perspective, a great deal, particularly of those of you who are listening from the United States or familiar with the United States, a great deal of the United States, actually, its heritage is based upon this business of ageless wisdom. You might say, oh, come on, I never even heard that word before. How could our heritage be based upon it? Because the creators, as I spoke about in a couple weeks ago, they created the United States. The people who were behind the forefathers of our nation, be it from Washington to Jefferson, you name it. The people who signed the Constitution, the people and helped to create it, the people who signed definitely the Declaration of Independence. Those people talked about the Creator and had the same basic concepts of understanding that I'm trying to express to you. I might say they all thought the same way. They had different ideas, somewhat. But basically, they had this foundation. And so they had a similar idea about what sacred would mean. If we could go back and question them about it, I'm not sure. I can't remember reading anything by those great men, mostly, who wrote something that dealt with sacred. So maybe one of you out there may know about that. If you do, you can give me a call right now, if you want. But at any rate, I think it's very important to recognize this concept, because one of the things, as I mentioned at the very beginning here, one of the things I encountered this week was the word sacred being used a couple of different ways. Especially today, I was listening to the California Supreme Court listen to arguments about the institution of marriage and whether it should be offered as a marriage to people who are of the same sex. It was very fascinating listening to all the arguments that were presented. Now, the appeals court had said that marriage was not going to be legally offered to people who were of the same sex, but something similar, but it wouldn't be called marriage, would be offered as a legal partnership type of arrangement that had already been passed by the legislature, and they were upholding Proposition 22 from the year 2000 that had passed in California, stating that marriage was a sacred, it was defined in Section 1977, but it was the proposition approved it and reinforced it, that marriage was a sacred institution of a bonding or marriage between a man and a woman. That's what the definition was. And the court said it several times, and I found it intriguing because I listened to every argument, and at no time, at least while I was listening, I wasn't able to hear every part of the arguments because it went on for hours, but most of it I heard. And every time somebody that I heard got up and talked about it, whether they were for it or against it, it didn't really matter, they left out the issue of sacred, including all the judges. They read what the definition was, but they didn't discuss what the word sacred meant, and nobody brought up that concept. I can tell you why. And this is very important, and it has to do with something I had brought up a couple weeks ago as well, which I didn't really talk about last week because I didn't kind of ran out of time, but the Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich, the prior Speaker of the House from the 1990s, he wrote a book called Real Change. Yeah, honestly wrote a book called that because many people think that that was kind of like the familiar name that people have been calling everybody's campaign. I'm in for change, you know. But this guy wrote this book before actually most of the people's campaigns were espousing it, so really sort of like his own invention that other people may have caught on to by reading his book or maybe just come up with it on their own. At any rate, he wrote this book on political change. He calls it Real Change. And in the book, one of the things he mentions, which I think is important, is that in the United States, there has been a kind of moving away from all concepts that have anything to do with God, period, in political issues, in political settings. And some people think that that's constitutionally right because of a thing called the Establishment Clause, which says that religion cannot be used as a method of determining war in the United States. It has to be left out in that determination. But the interesting problem about this is that religion is what created law in the first place, because in the Declaration of Independence it says that all the rights of the people that go to create our government come from the Creator. So in other words, human beings get their rights from their Creator, and then they give some of those rights to create a government of which they have the ultimate power to change. Yeah, it's a pretty interesting idea. But there's an interesting point that came up in the court today while I was listening to it, and I'm going to tie it back together with this. Without using the word God and without using the word sacred, the Supreme Court of California decided or thought, as some of the judges did, that, and also the people who were arguing for or against this particular issue, agreed with them that ultimately, I don't want to get too complex here, but I think it's very interesting, ultimately, the rules and laws that are created by the people, which are incorporated within the Constitution, etc., become a limitation on what the people can and cannot say or do in general, and they have to be, in some ways, not contradictory to the idea that both the people empowered the law, at the same time, the court makes judgment upon whether or not that law has exceeded or has changed the perspective that its original intention was, and whether it fits in with other laws that have been made. Very interesting point. So it's sort of like the law itself has its own living element to it, beyond the people who create it, to some extent. Ultimately, the people can change it, but they would have to change even the Constitution in some circumstances. It's a fascinating idea, but all of this starts with the Creator. And unfortunately, that was not talked about because, at least in today's world, it seems as though, and in today's country, ours here in the United States, it seems as though the object or the concept of bringing anything about God into a discussion about why people are motivated to do something or not do something cannot be considered. This created a huge gap and problem in the arguments I heard today because they couldn't talk about the very word that we're discussing tonight, the word sacred, the most important word in the law. As it was proposed in 1977, and much earlier than that, there were other versions of it. And as it was voted on in 2000, and passed, that the word sacred was, to me, the most important thing, and that's the reason they couldn't come to any conclusion. I don't know how these judges are going to exactly rule on this whole thing, but here's the issue. I wrote about this in a textbook I wrote called Life's Hidden Meaning. Some of you may have read that. And it's a big book, by the way. And if you haven't read it, don't feel bad. It would take a long time to read it for most people, and it's not that easy. But I would love for you to get a copy and look at it. You might find some very helpful things in it. At any rate, enough of the plug. Get back to the subject. And that is that if you can't really talk about the word sacred, I don't know how you can define the difference between a domestic partnership, which is what people who are of the same sex have offered to them at present in California, and a marriage, because the most important and maybe the single thing that is the difference between the two is missing. Because the people who are arguing for marriage and against people of the same sex being able to say that they're married, I mean, I realize it's more semantic than anything, it seems like. Their thought process goes something like this. They couldn't say this. The people that I saw today could not say this, apparently, to the Supreme Court. But I think that behind it, neither subconsciously or consciously, this is what's going on in their head. And I don't want to say that all of them are thinking this, but this is my thought process anyway. And that is that the Creator, God, said that marriage is constricted to a man and a woman. And all other relationships that are not necessarily condemned by this great being, but the marriage that is between a man and a woman is sacred, and the quote-unquote domestic relationship or marriage, we'll call it if you want to call it that, because again, to me it's more semantic, but there is a real real issue here, between people of the same sex is actually something that is not sacred. And I don't want to insult people of the same sex, but I'm trying to define what people of opposite sexes who are married are feeling and thinking. Because it's important, I think, for both sides to get some understanding of what this whole thing is about, which, unfortunately, despite all the hours that I listened to this case before the Supreme Court, never came up. It's like, hey, we got the 800-pound gorilla in the room with us, but nobody's going to talk about it because it's about God, and we can't talk about it if it's about God. It was just the weirdest thing to listen to this whole thing. And they're all stumbling around trying to figure out some way to talk about God without talking about God, and nobody talked. I mean, nobody said anything that made any sense anyway. Okay, so that's my take on it. Now, what is it that I think that makes it sacred or not sacred, and is it true that it is? I mean, I'm telling you what people think, and is that the truth? Well, this is what I think. I think that people can have all kinds of relationships, and if there's love in the relationship, in some ways it's godly. So love to me is a critical element, and if people love each other, there's got to be a godly element there, because love is part of the Creator's own mind. It's the second part of the Creator's own mind. So people that love each other, I think, you know, have some argument, well, this is a godly relationship. But the difference here is another factor, and that is the question of love versus sacredness. Sacredness is like the total, complete picture of what the Creator wants. As it will say, you know, like in a perfect world, if we could have things exactly as they should be or they could be or whatever, and the eventual outcome of being most godly, sacredness is it. Okay, something becomes sacred when it has reached a really high level. And based upon the aspects of what I have both read and what I have seen and what makes most sense to me in terms of the way human beings are constructed, which I'm going to talk about later in the show, it seems to me that two people of the same sex would have almost an impossible circumstance to create a sacred relationship. It has to do with the nature of sex and how sex is exchanged, sexual energy is exchanged between them. It has absolutely nothing to do, in my opinion, with quote-unquote morals. Interesting. That part is not a question of morals. That part has to do with like a mechanical thing of exchange of energy. I'll have to explain that in a little bit. But that part is where the sacredness probably gets pushed away from the ability for people who have same-sex marriages to achieve a sacred relationship. They can achieve a loving relationship, but the sacredness becomes very, very complicated and difficult. Now, there's other issues that come into play here. Some of these involve the ability to have children naturally. And although it's a wonderful thing, being a parent, whether you adopt a children, whether you take them in under any circumstances to help them to grow, and even if they're not your children, if you parent them in other ways, you're doing great things, and it's a wonderful thing. That, to me, is an expression of positive element, just like love is between the people. So being a parent is a wonderful thing. But to me, again, getting into the sacred issue, it seems to me that the nature of the creation of children, and on a biological level, has another element to it. You may remember I said sacrifice. One of the elements of sacrifice in having children, in a biological sense, is the process itself. It's not easy for either member, probably more difficult for the woman than the man, but that could be argued. In any case, there's this sacrifice, which, again, was not brought up today. Interestingly, in this case this morning, and this happened on Tuesday, by the way. Today is Friday, of course, but this happened on Tuesday. It was pre-recorded. And they talked about children, but nobody argued this point. I couldn't believe they couldn't figure this out, because the argument that the court had back to the people who were saying, well, children is a special case, and therefore it makes marriage between a man and a woman more important, but they couldn't figure out why that was the case. And the answer is so simple, that the two people having the child are making a greater sacrifice to do that. And part of that sacrifice raises it from a great act of love to an element of godly sacredness for those particular individuals. The greater sacrifice does, as well as certain other elements which are a little technical and I don't want to get into right now, but they still add to the whole package. So ultimately, it does make a difference if you adopt or if you help the parent grandchildren or the kids next door, whatever the story may be, in comparison to having children, because it's a greater sacrifice. And if someone doesn't have the children, unless we're going to really go to complete test tube babies, that's pretty much the way we do it. And it's also the design of the Creator itself. Very important element here. Very important. Oh, so you might say, well, tell us some more of those little tidbits you're going to... Okay, I'll give you one example. That the bonding that takes place during the both the procreation and then eventually the development of the fetus, all of that has a great deal to do with the relationship development between the two people, and it's not replaceable just by adopting. There's a special kind of thing that's taking place during that process, during the 9 months or so that's taking place. And there's other things, many other things that take place during that process. If you were to eliminate it and still say it's equal to, or maybe bettered by adoption, I wouldn't go along with that. That doesn't mean that people who adopt love their children any less or are willing to make other sacrifices for them down the line. I'm talking about the actual act of conceiving children. It has a special category that helps to push it into the sacred category. I hope you're following this. I know it's a little complicated, but I'm trying to explain what sacred is in comparison to all the other great virtues we have. And this is just one thing to give you an example of it, but there's zillions of them around. And so it's important to get a better understanding through maybe talking about direct examples. So I watched this program today, and in the process I learned more in myself about how people don't understand and are not willing to examine what sacredness is. It is scary. It actually, the most troubling part of watching several hours of this debate in the Supreme Court of California was that at the end, the thing I felt is tremendously let down by the fact that of all these things, that the most critical thing was not talked about. And it couldn't be talked about because they have to keep religion out of law, and it's like nuts. It's like totally crazy because we've become like we are making ourselves crazy by not dealing with the really relevant issues in our lives. We need to have these discussions, and I hope today's show is going to do that. I hope it's practical enough. I don't want to get too far out there. I'm trying to make it so. So that people can say, hey, let's have a talk about that. That kind of makes sense. All right. So then, okay, where else does sacredness really touch us? Where else does it really have something to do with life in general? And that another place that it has to do with is the death process and people's right to choose when they might die or not and many other issues. And this is so critical to understand. And also the question of putting people to death for various reasons, including in military encounters and also on death row. There are a tremendous number of, we'll say, various circumstances in terms of us understanding about death and whether we should exercise control over it with other people and with ourselves that has to do with keeping ourselves and eventually our society sacred. This is a big issue. And again, I'm picking some very contentious ones because I want people to to think about it more. Part of the show is to get everybody to think and listen to it. I hope I'm doing that. Okay, so where does all this lead? But if death is a big issue, what is the principle that makes death sacred versus non-sacred? Well, this is going to surprise you because I think most people haven't thought about this, but our life is given to us by our soul, which we are part of. So it's just the same thing, like the soul is God in a sort of a substitute, surrogate form, and it gives us our life. And at some point, we were part of the process of making the decision. Then we become separated from our soul, and we are free and independent thinkers. But the point is that that life came from another source. Matter of fact, all life eventually comes from God. And if you respect that life at the level of sacredness, not just love, not just caring for, not just giving to, helping, whatever, but at the level of sacredness, then taking life becomes a very complicated, if not almost impossible for some people to figure out, circumstance. It's quite important to recognize that life is not owned by the being who has it, but it is shared through the being that gave it. That's a hard thing to understand. And that means, and if the being who gave you life, like a soul or God, if on a higher scale, it sees itself as being one with all and connected to one with all, then that really complicates the situation because it isn't our life. It's everybody's life that we affect if we were to kill ourselves, euthanize, whatever word you want to do, you know, death by doctor, whatever the situation. And the interesting thing is, if we take the life of someone else who has murdered someone or someone else, something else, we also have to be concerned about that particular process as well, because it affects everybody, because we're all connected together. Wow. Something to think about. I'm going to talk more about that. Other issues that deal with the element of being sacred, including what does it mean to become a sacred planet? We are not one, but how do we get there? And many other stuff. But first, we're going to go to break. And we're only doing one break per show now. This is the way to save time, so I can yak at you more and you can yak at me or whatever. And we will be back in a couple of minutes.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for a better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower, M-A-C-F-L-O-U-E-R.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
We are back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Today we are talking about what the meaning of sacred is and how that can affect everything in our life if we really understand what it means and maybe change some of our ideas about some of the issues that we may have with certain biases about and be polarized in a certain way. Very interesting stuff. Now, I ended the last segment talking about what death is and how death becomes sacred, provided that we respect the fact that it isn't just our life or the life of something else when we decide to intervene and change the length or longevity of it abruptly. Even if we're ill, if we don't die of a natural death and we decide, well, you know, I'm pretty sick, I think it's time to check out, what does that mean and how should we handle those kinds of situations? And I'm suggesting this, that sacredness means that that life, all life, has to be looked at as being part of some greater being's design. And until we have a pretty good understanding, I don't know if we have to have exactly the same level of understanding as our soul, but a pretty good understanding of what our soul really wants, for us to say that we're going to take our life or the life of even someone who's murdered someone else, etc., may really be, unfortunately, a serious error. Now, I'm going to say something that's directly in contradiction to that. What happens if one group of people come in and they say, we're going to kill you, we're going to take over whatever you have and make you prisoners and enslave you? Do you have a right to defend yourself and also end up potentially taking the life of one of them? And the answer to this is going to surprise you. The answer is yes. But this is a complicated circumstance in which the soul of those people has obviously lost enough contact with them so that they are not functioning in accord with their soul. And because if they were, they wouldn't be acting in such an arbitrary and destructive manner, you see. And when people are doing that as being the aggressor, we'll say, then the process means that you can, provided you have good wisdom, defend yourself and also even fight back. Interestingly, this was brought out in some books written by a person named Alice Bailey back in the 30s and 40s, during the time of World War II, in which she was writing what some great being who was a master, someone who had gone beyond the human kingdom and was like a superhuman, but he was dictating and she was writing this stuff down. You may believe this, you may not, but I believe that's what happened. And the words that she wrote indicated that what we were supposed to do was to fight the darkness and the actual evil that was taking place in some parts of the world by, you know, of course, the Nazis and, in our case, the Japanese. And they were trying to take away the freedoms and destroy the will, etc., and they were murdering millions of people throughout the world. And so we in other countries fought back. That's an example of World War II. But the argument made by this super being, his name was DK, for those of you who would like to know that. At any rate, he suggested that fighting in this particular case was necessary because these people were not in contact with their soul and therefore on the dark side. And if we didn't fight, if you became a pacifist, you were actually seceding to darkness and losing more contact with your own soul. Kind of interesting problem. Again, you need great wisdom to understand these things, to know when it's right or wrong. But all of this has, how does this fit into being sacred? Well, in order to be sacred, you have to have incredible wisdom and judgment at times. You have to be able to determine what is the correct thing, and there are no cookie-cutter answers. There are times when we must really search for the more soul level, how it affects the many, how it brings the most good to the most amount at the most amount of the time, that kind of thing, in order to perceive what really is the correct way to be sacred. And without being able to do that, sacredness is lost. In our present world, in order for this world to become sacred, we would have to raise the consciousness of the whole planet a huge amount, way more than twice, three, four, five times the amount that the people presently are conscious. It's going to be a while before we achieve that. Why is that the case? Because on an individual level, each person, on an average, has got to be able to do what I just talked about. They're going to have to be able to have tremendous wisdom in and love in their decisions, tremendous improvements in their own judgment, so that each of us sees ourselves more as a collective while we function as individuals. Very difficult for us to even get near that concept today. Most people are so incredibly selfish and stuck into that mode of self-aggrandizement, self-everything, that they don't see the oneness between themselves and all others, and that we come from a single source, and we're working to grow and co-create with this great source of the Creator of God. That's a big step for most people. And even if they're very religious, it doesn't mean they necessarily have that thought process. Many religions tend to go the opposite direction because they still increase personal love, but not love on a universal level. And that's a big problem. It is, really. Okay, so what about, since I'm talking about religion, what about sacredness in religions? How does that vary from what I've been discussing up to this point? Well, oh, and by the way, I think I'll give out this phone number one more time. Let me reach over for it again. All right. The first one in the U.S., in case you want to call it during this show, because I think this is an interesting subject, if you would like to call in, please do, 877-876-5227. I said that pretty quick last time. And in Canada, 888-815-9756. Okay. So, in religions, generally speaking, now I'm not saying that every religion says this, but I'm just giving the context of it. Sacredness is that part of the religion which makes the religion itself more important than people usually are. It builds up the religion in some way to get people to become greater worshipers, believers, we'll say followers even, of the tenets of the religion. This is not the definition I'm giving today about sacredness. Sacredness is not about even making anything that is a human invention become greater. And religion, to me, is part of human invention. It may have a lot to do with God in some religions, but it is not necessarily about our relationship purely, solely, in being a co-creator with God. Rather, it's usually about following tenets about what God wants from us and how we're going to get something in the bargain, be it eternal life afterwards or something that deals with our fears. But I think it's important to understand that what I'm saying is sacredness comes from co-creating some element that we perceive as really being an expression of our Creator, co-creating. It's very important to understand that. If the co-creation is not present, it's not the kind of sacredness I'm discussing. And the same is true about how to make our world become sacred. It has to be co-created by, especially humans, now and into the future. We have to make this world sacred. It isn't going to be bestowed upon because we followed certain rules or beliefs. It isn't going to happen because of some time issue, like, and it's not going to happen because of some prophecy or prediction. It's going to happen because we co-create with our Creator, and we understand what it means to have all the virtues in line that eventually are brought together, bring this totality that I call sacredness in the world. It's like the world becomes, in general, at a very high level, part of the Creator all around us, meaning tremendously virtuous and consistently so. And it's not just a matter of an amount, it's also a consistency element. And this is what we're aiming for. This is what I'm discussing. Very different than a religion, because most religions don't deal with sacredness in that fashion. And so if we're the co-creators, I want you to think about this. If we're the co-creators, then there is no definition for sacredness that will last beyond the next second, because it's constantly being changed by our creations. And the actual state of being sacred has a numerical value to it. Are you ready for this? Okay, here it comes. The numerical value is really where one is in a state more than being in all other states. So if one is more sacred than any other state of non-sacredness, one has achieved a state of being sacred. So it takes at least 50 plus 0.0001% more for a person to be consistently virtuous to reach a state of what I call sacredness than not. And that's what leads me to believe that a sacred planet is a planet where at least half of the time and half of the ability of all those that are there is used to create their creator in existence during all the time that they exist within that world. All those that are there are doing that. That's a huge amount more than where we are right now. And I believe that level is what is required, because anything less than that always leads in the opposite direction. Whereas that always will tend towards leading, but there's no guarantees, towards it becoming more and more so. So you've got to get just over 50% before you could call a place sacred, in my opinion. That's based upon my definition, and you may have a different one. But that's my thought process. It's about change and how it's moving in a particular direction, rather than it's about being something that for all time remains that way. And as long as you're over the 50%, then you're growing, and you're going to keep, most likely going to keep growing more towards the Creator. And if you fall below the 50%, the opposite is true. That's my opinion. Sacredness is the point at which all the life has something to do with the Creator. All the life in a world has something to do with the Creator, because over half of the life that has control over co-creation with the Creator, which is human and beyond, is attuned to doing that. And it leads, therefore, to a world in which all life is touched, all life in some way is affected by the virtue created by all those participating within. Interestingly, that doesn't mean that each human being is exactly at that level. As a matter of fact, you could have some that are really way below the halfway point, but made up for by those who are way beyond. That's another point that I think is important to understand. And the averages here do make up a difference. And you could have some slackers. It's possible. Not too many, because I think that the world becomes too difficult for those who are not even close to living a sacred life to try to live in a world that is sacred. It would be extremely difficult for them, and they would probably find it intolerable, if not even deadly in some respects, because they would be living so far away from the life that is surrounding them, and they would probably create problems for themselves so intensely that they would need to leave that world. Yes, souls can leave. The soul can leave the world and go to a planet of more primitive, less sacred design and exist there. So in a way, it's sort of like self-determining who ends up where. Now, a lot of you might say, well, hey, where do I get the ticket to go to the planet that's sacred? Because I'd like to leave this one as soon as possible. Because this one may not be sacred for hundreds, if not millennia, and it's going to be a difficult process. But let me remind you that all of us came here as souls to try to make this world sacred. That is the purpose of being here. We've forgotten while we're in incarnation, particularly physical incarnation. Many of us will gradually remember as we die from the bodies that we exist in right now and move back to becoming our soul. But at the present moment, being in physical incarnation, which is the most difficult, the concept of sacredness is very difficult for us to carry through on, much less even understand, which was so evident today in the Supreme Court in California. So it's a very, very important thing, I think, to recognize that we came here to make this world sacred, or at least try to add something to it in each of our lifetimes, which includes the physical world, the astral, and the lower mental, until we go back to being our soul. Each incarnation is a process to get us closer towards doing that. Some of us are doing a little better than others, some of us are doing a lot better, and some of us are doing really a lousy job. But the point is, that's what we really came here for. And we are here of our own volition. We're not forced to be here. I know it's hard to believe, but we're really not. There is an option. As a soul, we could choose to leave. But I almost guarantee that the souls are so group conscious and so interested in the collective good of all, and any soul that thinks it can contribute, this is very important, thinks it can contribute, will stay. Those that have looked at their lives and said, hey, you know what? I don't think another incarnation here is going to work. And of course, they're doing this in a collective thought process. No soul is really doing this independent of all other souls. But it reaches a point where all the souls collectively are thinking this way and it's thinking that way. And they'll say, okay, well, it looks like I'm going to bug off to a easier world to live on and try to do good there, because this one is getting too hard and my incarnations are failing one after another. It's not helping all the other souls. It isn't helping the life of this world, and I'm not helping it to move towards becoming a sacred planet, which is what I really would like to do. This is what the soul is saying. It's what all our souls are saying. But most of us are going to be back. Almost all of us will be back. Even those that I meet when I go out and speak, and they say, I'm not coming back. Are you kidding? You've got me convinced I can leave. I'm leaving. See ya. Of course, I know different. I know that they will change their minds as they go through the dying process in a couple of bodies and change their consciousness and raise their spiritual understanding, and eventually they'll be their soul back to that state where they say, oh, time to do it again. Yeah. I'm going to do it again. By the way, I want to mention that you don't immediately incarnate. A lot of people have asked me that. No. You go back to being your soul. Some people can remain in that state for 100 years or sometimes hundreds of years before incarnating. Some choose an incarnation very soon after. It depends on the connection with the other souls and who's going to incarnate when and how it's going to best work. Very complicated, and it's the reason a human being can't figure it out. It's so complicated, even our supercomputers probably would have a very hard time to deal with such complexities. But the souls are more conscious. They're able to see the future much better, and they're able to actually have virtual realities that they've worked together on and see how it's going to most likely turn out. But remember, we're free agents, and so we can follow up the works if we really want to. Okay, what else is there that's so important to understand about being sacred? It's a condition in which each of us can participate every day of our lives. This is going to maybe surprise you. If you understood what I've said so far, and if you want to understand more, you can give me a call, you can read Life's Hidden Meaning, or maybe listen to some of the other shows I've done. I even have done shows on this subject before. If you seek each day to increase the sacredness of the world around you, and that is part of your thought process, think about it for a minute or two every hour. Start doing that. And maybe for 15 minutes once a day in the morning, or maybe again in the evening, who knows. That will make a huge difference in how each of us functions, because then we become aware of the fact that we are co-contributing. We are co-creating the changes that are necessary. Yes, I know I've said it could be hundreds or even thousands of years before this world becomes sacred, but we can get closer every day of our life. And each person matters. As a matter of fact, one person can make a huge difference. This is the surprising part about it. There are so few people actually doing this on any consistent level that the few who are doing it consistently make a big change. They are the ones that are the shakers and movers, getting us closer to the problems that are necessary to overcome in order to achieve it. Another thing we can do is bring it to the attention of the world, the things like I'm talking about in this program, because we're drowning it out right now. This was in Newt Gingrich's book, that we're taking God out of our society, and that's not a good thing. Okay, some of you may be agnostic or atheist. That's okay. I don't mind that, really. I think the important issue here is, though, to consider the possibility that what I'm saying in this show is true, and to leave yourself open to that. Get Life's Hidden Meaning, read parts of it, and see if it doesn't challenge you by thinking through the thought experiments in it and the other ideas in it, and see if it isn't true. See if it doesn't maybe change your mind, even if you're very atheistic and you say, "Oh, there's no such thing as God, I don't care about this." But you have to be listening to me tonight to probably do things. There's some doubts, because otherwise you probably would have turned me off by now. But I think it's important to recognize that we, the collective people who might be listening to the show, are interested in the concepts of spirit and God. They're also interested in principles of metaphysics. And for that reason alone, those of you listening right now can make a huge difference. I really point you in that direction and hope that you will. I have to make a couple of announcements very quickly. Those of you who have a chance this Sunday, I've got a show on 1170 AM. If you're in northeastern part of the United States, it's 1170 AM, WDISAM.com. If you're listening on the Internet, anywhere in the world, you can pick it up. Yeah, that's right. But in either case, if you're listening either way, I'm going to be talking about breaking addictions. It's going to be on from 1 to 2 p.m. That's 1 to 2 p.m. In the... I hope this is being corrected. I hope it's being corrected for the daily times, because we're changing. We're going to daylight saving time. I call it savings. But anyway, it's one. I there put that 1 to 2 p.m. If it isn't, you might check and see if it's been changed by the clocks moving. And 4 to 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. But that may have changed, because it's GMT minus 8 for those of you who can figure that stuff out. And daylight saving time has gone into effect, or will have gone into effect, Sunday morning at 2 a.m. Okay, so do listen in on that. Those of you who have a chance, stop by over at Mesa Fiesta Borders Sunday. Oh, March 17th, from 7 p.m. to 8:15 p.m., Life After Death. We're going to be talking about that. Not me, but one of the members of the spiritual group I am a member of. So please stop by for that, too. Okay, well, we are out of time for right now. I hope this show has been interesting, if not a little enlightening. And until next week, this has been Niles McClure for Why Life Is.
BBS, you know you're Roddy best. Competition come, but them know them can't test. Hey, what's up? This is The Worderer, and you can find me at thewordera.com. But right now, I'm just showing much love to BBS Radio, because if it ain't mainstream, then it's on bbsradio.com. Cause BBS, you know you're Roddy best. Competition come, but them know them can't test.
Italy, the new name in electronic music, presents his new album, Looking at the Stars. Check it out at www.vitalymusic.com and here at BBS Radio, engaging music for all listeners.
Did you know your name and date of birth speak volumes about you as a person and as a spiritual being? Well, your personal numerology can shine a light on your life's purpose, your true potential, and give you insight about your soul's journey in this lifetime. Join Allison Bachman, host of Visible by Numbers, Monday nights at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on BBS Radio, as she unlocks the secrets of how to live a happier, healthier, and more purposeful life by using numerology as a guide. You'll be inspired by Allison's passion, her amazing on-air readings, insightful topics, and guests. You don't want to miss Allison's show Monday nights on BBS. Visit Allison at www.visiblebynumbers.com for more information. Be well.